Let's do it.
Out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Now, this is starting to become a bit of a pattern. So if you tuned in for QB1, unfortunately, the duties of work have kept him away from us this evening. He might dial in a little bit later, but you know, don't get your hopes up. But we still got a great show for you. We got a great guest. And we also have my usual co-hosts here. We got wide receiver one, Mr. Miles Gorham. I guess also CB one now, since we know that Miles got them lockdown skills.
I don't claim cornerback. No, I don't claim it. I'm not okay. Defense isn't my thing. No.
Okay. All right. How's it going tonight, Miles?
Good. Just got back hanging out with the in-laws. I had to get my father-in-law in a suit, so I had to show him some style.
Oh, boy. All right. And Saxy Prince, what's good with you?
Good. Let me just say, there's been some rumors that, JR is potentially holding out of Climb the Podcast OTAs. He wants some new money. So he probably will show up later in Climb the Pocket trading camp. But right now he's holding out for some new money. So that's why he's been absent a bunch. He needs a new deal. So, but anyways, I've been good. It's my off weekend, so I've just been doing a lot of. I've actually been working in bed as well as writing. So,
what did you just say?
This is a child friendly podcast.
Come on, y'all! I'm saying I took work from work home, and I've just been working in bed.
Okay, all right. Okay.
Hey, listeners are about to come at you about that because that don't sound right.
Yeah, we'll pretend that's what he means, and we'll transition away from Yinka's bedroom exploits to our usual topic of conversation these last couple pods, NBA Finals. The Cavs got on the board. No, Miles was heartbroken. Yinka's Yinka's become a Kyrie fan.
Goodness. I've been trying to I played basketball the other day and I just had some like Kyrie tape just watching, trying to get some moves and stuff.
I can picture it too.
Oh my goodness. I couldn't do any of it, but he's becoming one of my favorite players to watch. Like, oh.
Yeah, but so because I feel like that'd be great content, the next time that you go out inspired by Kyrie, can you set your phone up next to the court so we can get some footage?
Man, y'all ain't ready for that. Y'all ain't ready for me to be that good. Real quick, on Thursday, after we did the podcast, whatever, I went down to play some basketball. And then, we had a few guys shooting around. He wanted to play a pickup game, all that stuff. So I partnered up with this dude who couldn't make a layup for his life. Like, those dudes who will run as fast as they can towards the basketball and throw it as hard as they can against the backboard? That was my partner. He didn't look for me at all. He drove straight into both dudes. And I was just like, you just hit me on the elbow or something. I try to cut as hard as I could. Nothing. This dude wanted to bounce it off the backboard and make sure it got into the hoop on the opposite end. So
I feel like if we were a little further into the pod, we could steal that segment from Rude Jude. You do black, white, or other. But we're not going to do all that. Miles, what was your take on the NBA Finals game?
To be honest, pretty early in the second half, I fell asleep. Like I told you all earlier, it was basically on the – I wouldn't be surprised if Cleveland wins this game because they were blowing them out. But at the same time, I was like, if I wake up in the morning and – they say Golden State won, it wouldn't surprise me at all. So I thought it was good for Cleveland. I'm glad this game isn't just a four-game sweep. Makes things a little more interesting. Of course, it brings on the 3-1 takes and everything. But the game I did watch, I thought Cleveland just – they're they're playing legit. Like, this is what you saw throughout the regular season, you know, throughout the postseason before the final series. So, you know, you finally saw kind of the Cleveland team that you expect to see against Golden State. But I just don't think they can sustain, you know, all the shooting and all the great shots that they made against Golden State team.
What was your thought on the officiating? Because that was one of the big topics on Twitter the day after. 20 free throws, I think, for the Caps in the first quarter. What were your thoughts on all that?
It was bad. Like, especially in a final series like this, you shouldn't be blowing the whistle as much as you are, in my opinion. I think you should be letting a lot of these guys play. Obviously, you got to call fouls because if there are fouls, but I thought they were being pretty ticky-tack, especially. And I'm not saying this because I'm rooting for Golden State, but I thought they were kind of – you could see some of the favoritism for the Cleveland side. And, you know, Cleveland's at home, so you kind of get a little bit of a home court advantage. But I thought it was pretty one-sided for sure.
Okay. And Yanka, since, you know, Kyrie has inspired you, I know that you've become said you're a Cleveland fan until game 7.
Yeah, I hopped on.
So you got to rep for Cleveland tonight. What were your thoughts on how things went down in the game?
Like, I mean, as soon as the game's
okay, and just like that, Yinka is gone.
Oh, he's too far from that router.
I guess it wouldn't be an episode unless Yinka did something.
I know
to mess up the pod, as he said.
Oh, he's back.
Ooh. Oh, there he is.
Yeah, my bad, y'all. I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened there.
Stop strand.
But no, as soon as the game started, I definitely felt like this was the game that we were liking. You know, there was a lot of back and forth. You could see the intensity with Bron and Kyrie and stuff. And, you know, they were hitting from behind the arc. My biggest issue was the officiating started. And I was like, this isn't, you know, the few calls, I'm just like, you know, that was ticky tack. But then it got really bad, obviously, with the Draymond Green, you know, technical foul and stuff, and how they called it on him. And then, you know, at the very end when he got a second one or his first one, I'm like, well, Draymond should be gone right now. But I don't know. It's just not a good look for the league if, you know, it seems like the officiating is trying to, you know, interfere in, you know, the game and stuff. And that's what I really felt like, even though I did feel like Cleveland was the better team, you know, on Friday night. I think Cleveland is doing a really good job, a better job trapping Curry and KD, and, you know, trying to make sure, you know, maybe Klay Thompson's beating you or, you know, Draymond Green is beating you, because I honestly feel that that's the only way that Cleveland has a chance to win it. You stop Curry and KD, you know, let the other two beat you.
I mean, KD did his thing, but like, Miles, I know that, you know, Curry's your guy, and I know you didn't watch the entire game, but
he definitely struggled.
Yeah, Cleveland went back to some of what they did, you know, in the past couple of years, where they rough Steph up off the ball. They were holding them, and you could tell it was frustrating, especially with the way the officiating was going,
right,
with things being called super tight for Cleveland. You could tell Steph was getting frustrated. What are you looking to see out of Steph in this next game in terms of how he plays or bounces back or how he makes an adjustment to deal with the physicality of the series that we're probably going to see going forward?
Yeah, well, they're going back to Golden State, so I definitely don't think the refs will allow as much as what they did in Cleveland. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's just the way, you know, some of that home court advantage stuff works, especially for a superstar like Curry. But I definitely think we'll see him bounce back, you know, them get back into a little more of the rhythm that they lost. I think just there's nothing you can do with KD at this point, because he's just locked in. Like, that man's not – he's playing because he's not going to lose this series. But he can't have – if Cleveland's going to come back, Curry's the key factor there of he can't let that happen he needs to get his shots down. He's got to stop letting the Cavaliers get in his head and everything like that. So I definitely think they did a really good job of doing that this last game. So they found the crutch for Golden State, and they know it's getting in Curry's head. So if Curry can kind of counteract that, then I think – they'll be all right.
We've kind of seen to get off that point, Miles. We've kind of seen that with Curry for the last couple, you know, finals. You know, there has been a few games in the previous 2 years where Curry has disappeared. You know, and if this is going to be the start of it, I think that
Golden State is going to have a problem. You know, Golden. I don't want to see Curry disappear because he is one of my favorite players to watch as well too. But if he disappears again, we might look at a game seven.
Yeah, no, it's possible. I mean, he's obviously the key factor because, you know, KD and Curry are the two superstars, and then Klay Thompson and Draymond Green are the stars, but they're not, you know, they're not on that same level. So it's relying on, you know, Durant and Curry to run the show, and, you know, Thompson and Green are doing their thing, you know, as the, you know, the complement. So if Curry's not hitting, you got, you know, they're definitely going to have a problem.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, you know, the game was the game and the game was the game and whatever. But let's talk about the biggest highlight from Friday night. The Black Panther trailer that dropped, y'all.
Yeah, Yinka, man.
Since, you know, man. I mean, you're about as close as a Wakanda to we have on the pod. We'll let you get it going for us in terms of what you thought of, in terms of what you thought about things. And, you know, yeah. What's got you hype about the movie? And if there's any other movies that this kind of reminded you of that you might be hyped to go see as well.
So, I mean, everyone who knows me knows that I'm a big Spider-Man fan. Spider-Man's my favorite superhero. But I watched this trailer, and, like, for the very first time, I got to see – I mean, it's such a small thing, but I got to see characters who look like me. You know, I got to see characters who, you know, they in some instance, they felt – authentic to the story that they're trying to tell. And everybody who knows anything about the Black Panther knows that it's ironic because it's this city that is highly advanced, highly technological, but it's like in the deep jungle, you know, so it's like a, you know, it's just very ironic the way that it is. I was very hyped about obviously how Black Panther is going to interact within it because he is the King of Wakanda. But I mean, even more so, there's this, he has this like little troop of women who are kind of his, like, I don't want to say bodyguards, but they're kind of his like own warriors and stuff. So it's just, it's kind of cool to see, you know, a mostly black, cast as well as seeing, you know, very, very strong women at the forefront, you know, just being just as equally important in this movie. So, all the social stuff aside, again, I think this is going to be a fantastic movie. Michael B. Jordan's in it. We'll talk about that hairstyle a little bit later, but no, I think it's going to be a great movie, and I'm actually really excited for it.
How about you, Miles?
Same. I mean, I knew that the second the character, the Black Panther character, came on in the latest Avengers movie, I was in the Civil War movie. I was excited because I hadn't done too much studying on who it was going to be, but when I found out it was going to be what's his name? I know
Chadwick Boseman.
Thank you. I knew it. Chadwick. I was excited because I you know, I loved him in the movie 42. I just think he's a really good actor. I think he portrays that role perfectly for what, you know, I envisioned the Black Panther to be in the Marvel series. So I'm really excited. I thought the trailer was hype. It got me excited. I haven't been this excited. I think I was telling you guys, I haven't been this excited to watch a Marvel movie since, I think, the first Avengers movie. So I'm excited. I can't wait.
And let's just say that it's not even fair for Chadwick because he people forget he played James Brown. So he got to be both kings. He got to be the king of funk, and now he's the king of Wakanda. So and the funny thing is,
he got to play Jackie Robinson. Right?
He's playing everybody. But the funny thing is to get the Black Panther role, he essentially went on Twitter and was just like, yo, Marvel, I'm ready to play this role. And Marvel's like, all right, okay. So, no, I'm excited for the movie.
So what you're saying is that you're mad you didn't get that read, huh?
Man. So the funny thing is they actually sent out some roles that were kind of opening up for the Black Panther, and I sent some of my stuff in. I didn't get a call back from Tammy, and I'm hoping it wasn't because I wasn't good enough, but it's probably because I've already worked with her casting agency and stuff.
Not African enough? Is that what it was?
No, because...
I'm just playing.
No. So the funny thing is like I played an African in the Civil War movie as an extra or whatever, so... I'm guessing they just can't. Once you see one African, you can't see him again in another movie. So there's
But Prince, we all look the same.
Nah.
We
so I'm getting off cup. I'm just playing around.
Oh man.
Miles, oh man.
Ooh. Watching hockey got Miles hyped tonight.
Hey.
Miles pissed off all of a lot of people. Man.
Whew.
Anyway, Jason, what do you think about the
I'm ready, man. Well, wife and I have already started looking online. We're gonna try to do a full family Black Panther thing for Halloween this year. Get the girls dressed up, Josie, myself, and we're gonna get all the candy this year. The plans have already started. So yeah, it was hype, man. I don't know. I think I've watched that trailer probably 40 times already, though. Like,
yep.
Just commercial break. Let me just go watch the Black Panther trailer again. Like, yeah, I'm ready for it, man. I'm ready.
I expect y'all to come in full African garb. If you need me to go talk to some people, y'all need to show up in like they forgot you in the movie and you guys just walked into one of the theaters. So,
all right. So since I guess we just decided we're just gonna make this the blackity black black black
blackity black black black, black, black,
black, black, black, black, black, black comedy podcast. We're gonna talk about something, Yinka.
Yes, sir.
We only have but so much time. But Drew wrote an article this week. Got a lot of hits, got a lot of traction.
Well.
And a lot of people upset. But it's about something that I've obviously been talking about quite a bit. It's been all over social media. I think probably every Thursday or Friday when certain segments of sports writer media just get some downtime, the argument gets going again and again and again. And it's about Colin Kaepernick and the fact that he's unemployed. And I'm not going to get into all of the nitty-gritty. Obviously, he's better than a lot of these dudes that have been signed. But Drew raised the idea that, hey, Minnesota should bring Cap in. He's obviously, at least I think, obviously better than Case Keenum. Obviously more proven than Taylor Heinicke. So, what do you guys think about that idea of a Kaepernick coming to Minnesota? And any takes that you might have that go along with it?
No, I actually was very much an advocate. Before we brought in Case Keenum, I was an advocate of bringing in Colin Kaepernick because he does I know that a lot of people just try to shoe-in starters as far as the quarterback position. This is our starter. We have to go with them. But I'm definitely for bringing Kaepernick. And I say that regardless of whether Teddy was a starter or not. I think Colin Kaepernick has proven himself to, at worst, be a backup in this league. I don't think he's a backup. I think he can start at a lot of different places who have tried to convince me that they have their proven starter or whatever the case is. But I think Kaepernick can come to a lot of situations and, push their starters and even become the starter. So I was all for it, and I'm still for it because I know that we gave Case Keenum some guaranteed money. But at the end of the day, if Bradford goes down, maybe he has a knee injury as well. He has had two knee injuries. I don't trust Case Keenum for more than two or three games. I would trust Colin Kaepernick for about eight. So,
but I'm not disagreeing with you at all here, Prince. Mm-hmm. But isn't that what the point of having a backup is to kind of spell you for the two, three, four games? Not like obviously like. Because most backups, they're backups because they're not meant to be every week starters.
Yeah.
So like that's what Case Keenum's supposed to be is like he can bridge that gap of two, three, four games if you really need him to. So isn't that kind of the idea of what a backup quarterback is? I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying about Kaepernick or anything or Keenum for that matter.
I guess jump in on this one just because
go ahead.
In this case, I mean, if you can get someone who has starter potential and you can get him at backup money. Why wouldn't you do it? I mean,
100%, 100%. I'm just saying
the argument
about, you trust Kaepernick for 8-plus games. So obviously, I would too. You don't trust Keenum for that. But, like, Keenum, you have guys for backups for a reason. Like a Chase Daniel, I would never give that dude a starter money. I wouldn't even give him – I mean, that dude's made way too much money in his career for what he's done. But –
Matt Castle.
Right. Like those are guys but you trust them to, get you through a few games, through a few bridge games, that if your quarterback, gets dinged up for a few weeks. But to me, because that's kind of what your idea of a starter is. You look at a guy like Colin Kaepernick and you're picturing 8-plus games, that's a starter, like you said. you envision him as a starter in this league, which I do too. And it obviously doesn't look like that's going to happen for him, you know, right now, you know, with all the controversy that's been surrounding him and everything like that. But at least that, you know, I just wanted to jump in and just, you know, clarify my thought on, you know, when I view a backup, that's what I view, you know, a backup as, is, you know, a bridge guy, not a guy that, you know, I'm going to trust for 8-plus games. I mean, look at Sean Hill last year as a prime example.
Yeah. But one of the things you said a lot lately, Miles, has been, you know, teams should invest in the quarterback position more often and put more resources into that, right? So let's say teams do start to go that way and do start to draft quarterbacks more often. Are you still looking at that backup guy in that same way, where if it's, you know, your young guy that you potentially could see as, you know, taking over at some point down the line, do you still see them as a guy that's kind of more like a Case Keenum, or are you looking at that backup as being someone more maybe like a Jimmy Garoppolo that you feel like could come in and basically take over if things were necessary?
I guess, yeah, I think that's a really good point, because I think it all comes down to how you view a guy when you do draft somebody, especially to me in like the first, you know, the first and second day of a draft, you know, especially with the quarterback position, you kind of have a higher view of somebody when you draft them that high than you would on like day three and, you know, even the priority free agents, you know, out of undrafted free agents. But I think for me, you know, that'd be the biggest thing, is like, how do you view that guy coming out of college? Do you view him as a potential starter down the road? Because if you do, then you're drafting him, you know, to be that. You're drafting him as, you know, when he's fully developed at that point, you know, however long it is down the road, you view him as a potential starter. So that could be that, you know, that Jimmy Garoppolo aspect, or at the same time, you could just be drafting a quarterback to be your backup, kind of like, I guess, what's the example I'm thinking of? I think Washington did do that with Griffin, Robert Griffin, and Kirk Cousins at the time, just as like a, they use Kirk Cousins as like a backup plan, but at the same time, they use him as like a cheap backup option early on in his career. So I kind of view it that way too. So I'm definitely on board with both sides.
Hey, Prince, do you have any other takes that you wanted to fire off about the cap situation?
Yeah, I think as far as, I mean, I've kind of said this, and I'm trying to allude to it, just because as much as I dislike the quarterback, you know, hype all the time for every team, I do understand the importance of it. In that respect, I mean, I would want to start becoming the team that is hopping more on the, instead of getting the established starter and then the backup who's, you know, kind of a few miles below that starter, what I'm starting to do then is I'm going to start drafting two starting caliber, like high, very good quarterbacks to now, because now if you think about it, you can in some ways control what's happening with the league, right? I mean, obviously these backups are, you know, they're going places, they're getting traded for draft stock and, you know, these big contracts. But imagine having two starters at any given point for a team. Now you can control if you have a position of need, you can obviously use that as trade capital. You can get another draft pick, a high draft pick and stuff. So, I mean, I'm almost on the same. I'm just saying, like, maybe it's not time for a team to start looking at, I'm no longer going to get the established elite prospect quarterback. Now I'm going to get more than just that guy. I'm going to get a guy who can very well start, even if that guy goes down for the 8 games. I'm going to have two of those guys on the roster. So now, again, now I have a little bit more flexibility as far as what I want to do. Now, obviously, there's potential issues with that down the road, but I think that's a way, could be a new way for teams to start controlling what's happening within the league.
Well, especially real quick, especially with it's a lot harder to bring in a free agent quarterback who, you know, expects to be a starter, expects to get the starting opportunity to win it, you know, in some of these places, you know, they're not going to bring you in to do that. But when you draft somebody, they almost have no choice. I mean, they have to fight for their position, but like, you draft a quarterback, he kind of, you know, but you already have an established one in place, like a, you know, Tom Brady with Jimmy Garoppolo. That might not be the best example just because Tom Brady's, you know, the greatest quarterback of all time. But, you know, at the same time, I mean, you know, Garoppolo is expected to be a, you know, a starter down the road, you know, even when he was drafted as a prospect. So he kind of had no choice but to sit back and kind of learn and play that backup role. So when you do that, when you draft a player instead of trying to go give him a lot of money through free agency, It's a lot easier to have more team control and control of that player, in my opinion, than it is, you know, when you try to do it through free agency.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense there. And I guess kind of transitioning a little bit away from the cap and QB conversation, we are rolling into mandatory minicamp. And you know, we are probably football junkies. We are the ones who are out here, you know, looking for every one of those OTA highlights and following on Snapchat to make sure we don't miss any reps and anything like that. With this, with mandatory minicamp upcoming, what is it that you guys are looking for? What is it that you want to hear, see? Miles, you can't say Treadwell because you always say Treadwell. So other than Treadwell and the sophomore surge, what is it that you're looking to see? What is it that you're looking to hear? What are you hopeful for as we go into mandatory minicamp?
Well, for me, I'm an offensive guy, so I'm more of, you know, watching offensive plays, and I like to focus on that just because that's more of where my knowledge set is. I mean, I know defense, but offense is probably where I just prefer to watch. I'm looking for more of the you know, some of the rookies. You know, we've heard good things already, but, like, you know, guys, I want to see kind of the emergence more of, and just see the more of the progression through the summer as the summer goes, of like a Bucky Hodges. I haven't heard much of Stacy Coley, so I kind of want to. I've heard, you know, I think there's been small snippets that he's done well, but I mean, we haven't really seen or heard much, you know, through the highlights or anything like that. So I kind of like to see what he's been up to. And then obviously there's, I just want to continue to see the rookies kind of get involved and see how they're handling the whole process and everything like that, just because, you know, they're the ones that get the least amount of, you know, rest in terms of this time of the year and heading into training camp. So you just like to see how they're acclimating to this, just because they're getting a lot more on-field reps than they ever were in college. So it's just a lot more for them to digest.
And how about you, Prince? What are you looking to see?
For me, it one of the guys, and we've talked about him before, but Mackenzie Alexander, I want to see what he provides for this team. You know, is he going to allow us to have a little bit more flexibility with what we are going to do? Or are we going to, you know, be in kind of a situation because he hasn't been able to step up and, you know, take that slot role? You know, one thing that we're not also thinking about is, you know, if somebody does go down, I want Mackenzie Alexander to be able to be flexible to play in the slot, but also, you know, do what, probably where he's more natural and play on the outside as well if need be. So Mackenzie Alexander being one. I know it's, you know, we can get excited as we want, but Stephon Diggs, you know, the skill set that he brings, obviously being able to work in the slot, being able to work on the outside. All the tape work that I've done is Stephon Diggs is just a nightmare for teams to have to defend. So I guess I want to see how he's improved. You know, it might not seem like he can get any more better than he already is, but I want to see how much he's even progressed to see where we can line him up so that we're constantly, you know, we're constantly getting those mismatches that we need to. You're able to move guys like, you know, Adam Thielen and Treadwell and, you know, some of our other wide receivers, because of the things that Stephon Diggs can do. And Ari, as Miles had said, the rookies, obviously we're looking to see what, you know, Stacy Coley can do and whatnot. But those are two guys that I'm really looking out for, and I will be looking out for come training camp.
How about you, Jason? I know you've I can already picture the name that you're thinking of that you're gonna go with. I'm just gonna say one real quick too on the defensive side. Jayron Kearse. I just kinda wanna see where, you know, where he's progressing, but I'll let you go ahead.
I mean, who do you think I was going to say?
Trey Waynes.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
I'm kind of right with the same thing Yank is saying in terms of Mackenzie Alexander, where, I mean, a lot of what I think we want to do this year when it comes defensively really rests on a couple of guys that aren't proven. Like, yeah, Terrence Newman is out there. He's 39. You have to feel like the cliff is coming at some point. At some point you feel like he's not going to be able to do the number of reps that he's able to, or he's going to finally lose that step. So, yeah, Mackenzie Alexander and Trey Waynes are the two, you know, players defensively that I'm most worried about. And it's, even though I told Miles he couldn't say Treadwell, something that I do want to see with him, because he does look like he's moving a lot better. But one of the things we have noted a couple times when we've been talking about things is I still would like to see some more diversity on his releases. It still seems like he still kind of has his primary go-to move that he he goes to very often. And like Yankee was just saying when about Diggs, I mean, one of the things that makes Diggs so dangerous is that he has, you know, moves and counters, and he's very, very, very good at getting off the line. That was one of the things that, for all his size, Treadwell struggled with a little bit, in part, I have to imagine, because DBs knew what he wanted to do to get off the line. So that's one of the things that I want to see from him. Maybe it's not going to be mandatory in minicamp. Maybe it's kind of, you know, the offseason, you know, when, you know, they get together for the passing academy, if that happens again this year. But that would be one of those things that I want to see in a clip somewhere. Just one time they show him coming off the ball, doing something different than the thing we always see him doing when he comes off the ball.
Well, with the Diggs part too, you know, guys are starting to get, they're afraid to jam him to the line just because he's so lethal. You know, you try to jam him and he gets you off the line, it's over. So Diggs is starting to gain that respect, which I love to see. Is he's starting to gain that respect from DBs where, you know, they can't check him the way they thought they could. You know, like Patrick Peterson, his rookie year, he locked him down pretty good. I mean, I know that was a big part of the NFL top 100. I think it was Tyrann Mathieu that had talked about it a couple years ago, how, you know, Diggs is the type of guy that likes to talk. He likes to talk trash a lot, and Peterson put him in check, but I don't think at this point, you know, Diggs is going to let anybody put him in check that way anymore, just the way he's starting to progress and, you know, all the moves he's starting to come up with. Not that he can't get checked, but I just don't think we're going to see the way a Patrick Peterson did to him his rookie year. We're going to see that very often at all.
I'm right there with you. Yeah, Diggs is the player that, you know, obviously, you know, when we see our slot, people set up our slot packages and things like that, everyone wants to relegate my man to the slot position. But he's a guy that I think, like Inka said, should be used all over the offense, just be a weapon for us all over the place. But I guess that was a really, really disjointed segue, because our next guest just wrote an article about the Vikings position groups and kind of the optimal way to deploy all the players that we have to maximize our output both offensively and defensively. So if you bear with us for just a moment, we will get our segment with Austin from Vikings Territory up. And we'll see you on the other side. Well, all right, y'all. We have a special guest, our first two-time very guest special on the Climbing the Pocket podcast. Austin, what's going on, my man?
You know what? I didn't know that. I'm kind of honored. The first two-timer.
Yeah, like, who else would it be? But, you know, it's kind of embarrassing as we get into this. How do we pronounce your last name properly? Because I know how it sounds in my head.
The dude pitching for the Twins right now is giving me a lot of hate on Twitter because we share the same last name. I don't know how they say it, but I say Belial. Okay. Belial. S is silent.
Yes. Is that what you were going with, Yanka?
Yeah, I mean, I've known it. It's Belial. You could just ask me, man.
That's all good. As long as you don't say Belizzle or Play.
Coming all to right. The stage, awesome Belizzle.
That'd be my rap name.
Belizzles. Well, we had to get Austin back on here because since the last time we had Austin on, the website that he works with has been pumping out nothing but pro-Bradford propaganda. And we're just wondering, you know, what's going on with that? Yinka wasn't here last time to, you know, stand as a sergeant-at-arms in defense of Theodore Bridgewater. So we just wanted to get you on, Austin, and try to get some understanding here. Because in your article, the one, like, Sam Bradford, the Forgotten Man.
Yeah,
I guess the premise that you had in there was that, you know, through all the Teddy hype and everything, maybe the fan base is forgetting about Sam a little bit. And I wanted to have you on just to kind of, to get, I guess, a little bit more of your thoughts on that, and then have a little discussion about that premise.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I'll keep it quick just because I'm sure most people who follow me read the article, but my whole thing and where that kind of stemmed from was the day that Teddy video got released, what I noticed about it was, you know, Teddy's throwing the ball and dropping back in slow motion. That's great. And you've got a guy sitting behind him. And Sam always kind of looks a little dour and sad and shoulders slumped. He's just got that look about him. But I noticed it especially so about that video. And what was funny to me is, like, we're getting excited about Teddy, you know, throwing the football. And who knows how he was throwing it that day. But there's a guy sitting right behind him who – again, had a pretty impressive season for all the circumstances, and is just a better arm talent. So, like, viscerally, we should be getting more excited about Sam Bradford, the arm, than Teddy Bridgewater, the, you know, limpy dropback and suspect arm at the moment. I'm not saying – you guys know I'm a Teddy fan. That's just where I'm coming from right now.
Yinka, you're I see you laughing maniacally over there. What do you got to say, Doug?
Well, I mean, I also talked about the arm talent, and I think if I clarify something about Sam that I've never refuted, and actually something I've said quite a bit of time, is Sam, as far as his physical attributes, he is a talented guy. He can throw the ball a lot harder, longer, faster than Teddy. Like, he does have a lateral arm talent that I don't think Teddy will ever naturally have. Mm-hmm. But as far as maybe not talent, but maybe just more just the physical tools. But as far as a talent, I still think that there's, you know, there's some wiggle room as far as, you know, people who might be on Team Sam, people who might be on Team Teddy. There are just some throws that I see from Teddy, especially like, if you watch his out route, that, you know, out route corner or whatever mm-hmm. the case is, he always throws it on the dime.
Yep.
And, you know, to Sam's credit, you know, if you watch some of his, you know, some of his obviously down the field throws, you know, nine route, he throws beautifully right in the breadbasket more often than not. Sure. You know, I can see where, you know, there's some people who are more in love with the guy who can throw those perfect timing routes and those guys, and then the guy who can zing it in there. So, I mean, to that point, you know, it's because it's been 9 months. We haven't seen Teddy for so long. I mean, the Vikings have kind of kept him out, and he's done what he's needed to try to force himself back into the spotlight. Yeah. Because a lot of fans were starting to forget about Teddy because of Sam, and Teddy in his own right kind of forced the Vikings' hands to kind of like, hey, you guys need to start putting me back out mm-hmm. there. So I just think that it's an interesting, you know, concept that you put together with. You know, Sam's now feeling what Teddy's probably been feeling for the last couple months.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think that Teddy doesn't deserve to have the video put out about him. But I also think it's in the business world, and I touched on it briefly in the article, but in the business world of the NFL, you know, you've got X amount of machines running in the background, whether it be your marketing machine, your PR machine, your football operations, your whatever it is, you've got to appease all those different, you've got to keep them running, so to speak. And so, you know, how does social succeed? Clicks, right? You're going to put out a video of the guy that everybody loves, and you're going to get those clicks. It's good PR for your team to put the franchise guy in front of the fan base like that. So, of course, the Vikings are going to get attention from that. I think it's a little more PR play than actual progress for Teddy in terms of playing and there being some kind of competition, but it's still good to see regardless.
Yeah, I definitely don't think it's a competition. I think that at this point, I hope anyway that, you know, through all the joking and the back and forth and the memes and all that on Twitter, that, you know, there's no one that actually thinks, maybe outside of Ted Glover, that Teddy is going to start 2017 week one. But I think it's more about, you know, the thought process of, you know, 2018 and beyond and what that means. And I think for many, Teddy represents, I guess, more hope, maybe, or hope that you know, we actually found a franchise guy. Whereas Sam is still kind of seen, not kind of, Sam is still seen as a mercenary. You know, he's the guy that was brought in last year, the guy who really hasn't stuck anywhere. And I guess when we were having a conversation on Twitter about it, and I guess my point of contention with your piece a little bit wasn't necessarily, I think, that, you know, fans have forgotten about Sam. If anything, I'd say that part of the reason fans aren't as excited about Sam as they should be is that they remember Sam. Like, Sam has a book on him, and they understand what his track record is. You know, he was a number one overall pick, and, you know, those number one guys, when they don't do as well or live up to expectations, that's everywhere. And so fans are aware that, you know, he hasn't lived up to expectations, that he was bounced out of St. Louis, that, you know, even though he signed the extension in Philly, they immediately went out and drafted Carson Wentz. And so I think that some of that lack of excitement or potentially people not being as hype about Sam has a little bit more to do with the fact that there is a book on him. And that book, to date isn't as impressive as one might like for someone who does have the skill set of a Sam Bradford.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And unless there's just to go with the book analogy, unless there's some kind of giant cliffhanger or you know, surprise ending, we're not going to get a lot out of it other than what we've seen. And I agree with you, and I've always agreed with you on that point, that past history suggests that he's not going to be a better quarterback than he has been, even though he's been average to above average, right? You would have, and I told you this before, you would hope that with the circumstances and the pieces he has around him this year, that it's enough, but obviously we can't know. It's just speculation at this point.
What were you saying, Yinka?
I mean, I wasn't saying anything, but I guess we, I think you touched on obviously the plot twist that is Sam Bradford. If he can produce some kind of plot twist, you know, that is different than other seasons that he's had. You know, I still look at 2016 season as an anomaly more so than what he's kind of produced over the last couple of years. Now, can he produce it for the second year? Absolutely he can. I'm pulling for him to do that again. But I have to disagree
with a little of what you just said, though, because I know that we say that a lot, and you see that a lot on Vikings Twitter, that 2016 was an anomaly for Sam or an outlier season for Sam. And realistically speaking, it really wasn't. Like, when you look at him compared to the league, especially when you're looking at him and you know, what I consider to be the efficiency stats, like your yards per attempt, your, you know, adjusted yards per attempt, et cetera, he fell pretty well in line with where he'd been over the last 4 years. Where we saw the spike was that completion percentage shot up, and then because the completion percentage shot up, the passer rating went up. But, I mean, as many of us know, and I was talking to Drew about it the other day, Drew's working on the third down throws for Sam and charting all of them. So, you know, can't wait for that piece. Was pressing Drew about it just yesterday because I really want to see what comes of that. But, as all of us, you know, had our frustrations, you know, a lot of those completions that bumped up the percentage and the passer rating were empty completions. They didn't really do anything for the team. You know, it's third and eight. We're throwing it into the flat, you know, or behind the line of scrimmage or whatever it might be. So he was really the same. He's been the same guy really for the past 4 seasons. And that's across now 3 different offensive coordinators. So, what we're hoping for, I would say, is for next season to be an outlier season for him to get that uptick in performance, because he is in that better situation, better pass protection, better receivers, continuity, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. If I had to add one thing to that, and I think this would probably be a better way to say it, is Sam Bradford was actually the only constant in an outlier season for the Vikings. That's how I would put it. You know, he was consistently the same guy he has been his entire career, while the Vikings took a dip in terms of the number of injuries on the offensive line, the performance of the run game, the drop off of the defense. It was just a strange year. And, you know, surprisingly, Bradford was the only guy who didn't get hurt and played like he always has, which, again, it wasn't great, but was good given the circumstances.
I think that's about as well as I've heard anyone say it.
All right.
I guess to my point, as far as when I refer to it as an outlier, I mean, if you look at the kind of the past, and I'm starting to look in some of the Eagles games with Sam Bradford, I haven't quite gotten the St. Louis games. When I mean outlier, not necessarily in the stat-wise, but to your point about being a constant, like there have been seasons with Sam where his play was more problematic than it was obviously helping the team in which he was on. And I think that as far as we saw this coming year is Sam necessarily wasn't always consistently the issue. You know, obviously the injuries, the offensive line, the lack of run game, you know, some breakdowns on defense, defensive tackle type situations. When I say outlier, there were some seasons that Sam had in his past. I mean, more so in St. Louis than you saw Philadelphia, where it's just you couldn't necessarily point to Sam isn't playing very well and it's hurting his team more than it's helping. Mm-hmm. Whereas this year, I think his play led the Vikings to be more of like his play isn't necessarily hurting at all, but it's not necessarily helping. So he's kind of more of that neutral constant, like you were saying, that he
was at the quarterback position this year.
Mm-hmm. All right, so last thing on this, because I feel like, you know, between here and Twitter, we've covered Sam and Teddy and Sam again in most every way that we can. Austin, yes. How much more Sam Bradford propaganda should we expect from Vikings territory between now and the start of training camp? Or have you guys emptied the barrels at this point?
That's a good question. I believe we've emptied the barrels. There's really not much you could talk about, right? Like, I think we've covered all the bases with him. Unless Teddy Bridgewater comes back on the field and there's some kind of competition talk where he gets cleared to play. I think you see it again, but no, you can look for some different stuff out there. No more propaganda.
Well, that's a perfect segue because, you know, just this past week, you released what I thought was a very interesting article where you get back into some of the nuts and bolts football stuff. Some of the things, I guess, that the general public might find a little boring or nerdy, but the stuff that us football junkies in the off season, the stuff that we really get into and start and love to think about. And I'd love you to talk about it a little bit. Give us a little preview. Talk about the offensive and defensive packages that you're thinking about for the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, sure. A lot of people like to do like 53-man rosters and I could do that, but I thought, you know, we care about who starts and kind of the packages that the team puts out. So why not look at who I want to start? It's not necessarily who I think is going to start. It's if I was running the team and I was standing in front of the whiteboard, who would be my starters in each of the different packages? And let's simplify it a little bit to two wide receiver sets, three wide receiver sets. That's the offense. And then on defense, your base defense with three linebackers, and then your nickel defense where you take that weak side linebacker out and you put in a nickel corner. So, I took a look at the starters there, and I got a lot of flack for putting – what's his name? Aviante Collins. I don't know how to say his first name, but his number instead of Alex Boone's. I guess I'm curious, Jason, what would you like to know about the decisions I made? Because I got a lot of flack for putting a fullback in, and that was more – I felt compelled to do it because that's how you look at traditional two wide receiver sets.
So if it was up to you, I guess, and I know that, you know, I was giving you a little bit of grief about that, you know, on Twitter, I guess your ideal two wide receiver set for the Vikings based on the personnel that they have, would it be with Ham out there at fullback, or would you be looking at doing something like, you know, McKinnon and Cook both on the field together, or potentially, you know, Morgan or Hodges is another tight end option. I guess what would be your ideal optimized two wide receiver set to give us the most flexibility on offense?
Yeah, that's a good question. I kind of miss having a guy like Red Ellison, who if you did have a two wide receiver set, you could play him at H-back, you could play him at tight end, you could shift him into the backfield and play him at running back or fullback, excuse me. So my ideal situation would be I'd probably put another tight end on the field. I don't know about having two running backs on the field to start, but having a guy like David Morgan, who is a little unproven, but I think they like and is the number two tight end who can shift out, who can line up in the backfield, who can play in line. I think that's someone that gives you more flexibility. Now, a Cook McKinnon pairing would be fun, but I like tight ends, so give me two tight ends on the field.
Where are you at with it, Yanka? What would be your optimal? I guess we won't limit you to two wide receivers. What's your optimal set? What do you want to see the Vikings line up in the most when we get into next season?
Yeah, I am actually working on this right now, but I'm really loving the. Two formations, obviously. I'm loving the three wide receiver sets, and I'm also loving the two running back sets. Jason, I think we talked about this actually a few years ago before the 2016 season started. I like I want to see potentially Cook and Murray – or not Cook and Murray, but Cook and Jet on the field at the same time and having Jet, you know, go out wide or potentially having Cook go out wide. As far as three wide receiver sets, I'm looking at – you know, I'm actually one of the few people who said that I wanted Laquon Treadwell, you know, maybe potentially line up as the X. Having Diggs either move into the slot, you can have Thielen move into the slot, and having one of those two guys on the edge.
And like, those are my ideal slots just because I want to see us be able to spread the field a lot more horizontally than I do vertically. I know that Sam's hit because of his skill set, spreading the field vertically is, you know, something that he can do, but whether he's willing to do it necessarily isn't always, is kind of the question mark that we've seen over the last few years, Sam Bradford. So that's why I want to start looking at, can we start spreading the field more horizontally and making, you know, increasing our yak yards more than we've seen over the past few years.
I'm sure all the points Yinka just made were very insightful, and I missed them all because both of my children attacked me in the office while Yinka was speaking right there. So, Yinka, I'm sure what you just said right there was awesome.
It was. It was revolutionary. never heard the take before.
All right, and I guess the last piece that we'll touch on from because it kind of goes along with the conversation that we had with Eric from PFF. Austin, in terms of what you'd like to see the Vikings do on defense in their sub package, especially on, you know, third and down pass rush type situations, what are you looking at them doing, and what's the optimal kind of package of players that you'd like to see out there based on who we have on the roster?
Yeah, in my piece, I had a situation like that, and I know that Brian Robinson's getting up there in age and may not start, but I think he still has a lot of value, and he showed it last year, being able to shift down and play the three technique or play over the center and kind of play that role of a stand-up defensive end, but from the middle of the defensive line. And that gives you the freedom to even put Danelle Hunter out at the end, flanked with Everson Griffin. So you could take Linval out. You could put someone like Jahleel Johnson. I say keep Linval because I think he's a good pass rusher. Mackenzie Alexander in the nickel, and then Waynes is my starting corner on the outside. As for linebackers, you still got guys in Barr and Kendricks who can blitz and are pretty good at blitzing too. I don't think you change a lot. I think you bring another defensive end on the field. And something I didn't even think about, and this kind of reminded me of it, is Everson Griffin talked about playing inside as well. So you got another defensive end. You could run with four defensive ends. You could have Everson Griffin, Danelle Hunter, Brian Robinson, and I don't know who the fourth guy would be.
I guess where are you at on the talk of Anthony Barr being used more as a pass rusher this season than in years past?
No, I'm a firm no. If you're going to put him to start his NFL career at linebacker, you've got to be able to go with the highs and the lows of it. I don't think you can hit the panic button and say we're going to relegate this guy to being a hand in the ground pass rusher because he had an off season. I personally think he can play linebacker, and I think he's pretty good at it too. He was pretty average last year, but you saw what he could do the first year. I don't think you want to limit a guy with his skill set to playing in a box on the outside of the defensive line. I think he needs to be in space.
That makes sense. And how about you, Prince? Where are you at with it? Yinka, you still there? I see you on mute. So if you're talking, we can't hear anything that you're saying.
I thought I clicked the button. My bad. I think I put something out maybe last year that I do want to see Everson Griffin slide inside so you can get some more, get some more interior pass rush and potentially put Brian Robinson in. So you have obviously Brian Robinson and Everson Griffin in the middle. Danielle Hunter more likely on the left side. And then I do like you either have a couple of options. You can keep Everson Griffin on the right side and bring in a guy like Dayton Jones or Tom Johnson, or you can slide him in. And in that circumstances, what you could do is you could bring down Barr and then Harry to play, you know, linebacker role, because Harry does do that. You will see him sometimes as a stand-up linebacker in certain packages and whatnot. So I'm actually a little bit for it just because that's some of the things that Barr did well in college. Be an edge pass rusher, even if he was rushing from the linebacker spot. So I'm more for it. I think was it Eric who put out what he liked as far as our.
Yep. It was Eric. Yep.
Yeah, I liked that formation a little bit more. Just having the combination to be able to move Harry around. For me, it all starts with wherever you're going to put Harrison Smith. You know, if you if you put him in the kind of that linebacker spot, I think it allows you a little bit more flexibility, both on the back end and as far as what you do in the interior, because you know, if he needs to run side that sideline to sideline, he can do that. So for me, it just starts in the middle more so than it starts up front.
Well, I am glad we found something new for you guys to disagree on. I know Yinka was struggling to get his Uber fare together to meet you in Temecula, but maybe you guys can just come visit me up here in Canada. Austin, you know, tweeted out that duels have been made legal in my country. So, you know, if this gets particularly heated, you guys can come up here and just work it out mano a mano.
I'll get my asthma medication up there since you guys have free health care. So.
Yeah, this is true. We do have that. Well, that's all we have for you tonight, Austin. Thank you once again for coming on and chopping it up with us, you know, standing and fighting on behalf of your folks over at Vikings territory.
Always.
Yinka, thanks for coming on as well. Thank you for the flexibility. And, yeah, I'm sure we'll do this again at some point in the future. Austin, let us know when the sleeves versus gloves – round table off the schedule, and we will be there.
We got to plan that out.
Cool. All right, guys. Well, have a good night. As I alluded to earlier, there's a couple children looking for their father right now because it's bath time. So yep. I will talk to y'all later.
Sounds good. All right,
see ya.
Thanks, guys.
Well, all right. You just heard our interview with Austin from Vikings Territory. If you aren't already, though I'm sure you are if you listen to this podcast, follow Austin, read all his stuff. Now that we got our man, Mr. Sexy Prince, on the Daily Norseman, got the first article up like he said he would. You got anything else coming down the pipeline for us, Yinka?
Yeah. I'm actually writing it right now. I'm trying to break down some packages that I want to see. I'm going to start with the offensive side of the ball, and then I'll start breaking down some defensive packages that I kind of want to see with the Vikings. So look out for that.
Miles, anything?
I'm getting married in a month, so.
That's his own package in and of itself, hey. Man.
All right. Hey.
There's still so much to do, and I hate it. I just want – but we set our honeymoon up, so I'm about to be incognito for a while after, so.
Are you heading straight? Straight from the wedding to the honeymoon?
Straight. Like, our wedding's a Saturday night, and then our flight is – our wedding's in Duluth, by the way. Which is like 2.5 hours north of the Twin Cities. And then our flight's 9 a.m. to Mexico the next morning.
Oof.
So there's not much sleep. So, but I'm saying deuces. So I can't wait.
I'm just going to show up for the cake. That's it.
Hey, that's fine.
Miles, most importantly, have you already spoken to the resort to make sure that their Wi-Fi is up to standard? Because, you know, you have pod recording responsibilities that you just can't throw off for honeymoon.
Oh, yeah. You trying to get Miles divorce on his honeymoon?
Hey, she's not my wife yet, but my wife might throw my phone into the ocean.
Oh man. Well, I really got nothing else to say. Y'all follow if you aren't already. Subscribe, review, say nice things about us. We really like it when you say nice things about us.
We do.
And that's it. We're gonna wrap it for the night. Have a good one. All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and sign this off. My wife is telling me that my youngest won't sleep, so I'm being summoned.
My girl's been texting me. She probably heard the ping.
Yeah. Yep.
Hey, it wasn't me this time, y'all.
No, that was me. My girl was like, "You done?"